Welcome, and it's Monday morning. Welcome to Controversy. It's me, you see, your host, Stephen B., doing in the key of excellence for you and me, black, bold, beautiful, and brilliant. We're going to have a brilliant show today on a Monday.
Unlock the heart and souls of you and me.
Again on Monday, and I love Monday. A lot of people hate Monday. Me, I personally love Monday because, number one, for you distractors, for you people that oppose the things I'm talking about, you're about to have a bad Monday. People like me, I look at it as an opportunity to be successful once again. And while we're at it, let's get to today's topics. We're going to talk about some local, some national, obviously my favorite sports, and we're going to talk about Bernstein, too, because, boy, I got some issues. No, I'm just joking.
But yes, listen, I do.
Yes, you too. Black History Month, I tell you, it's interesting. So it's time for me to give you my Black History Month salute. This person was born to a middle-class family, yet he was born in a ghetto. He showed very wisdom and insight into the affairs that were happening in the world. And he started people by conversation. The interesting thing about this young man is that, you know, during his history, we don't know a lot about him between his childhood and him becoming an adult. But what we do know is by the time of age 30, he began to revolutionize the world with his conversation, which tend to be very short-worded, yet very, very powerful. And you know, he hung out with, like, these 12 guys. You know, it's like the gang of 12. And they kind of walked around throughout their area talking about, you know, new things and possibilities. And you know, while he was at it, he was quite a magician because he did all kinds of things. Like, he raised people from the dead and he healed the sick. And he was just a remarkable man. And he was a man of color. Matter of fact, I venture to think that his hair was more like dreads than anything. He was a Sephardic Jew, which means he was black. His name was Jesus Christ. So that's my Black History fact for this month. Now let's get to some local news. You know, once again, here in Indianapolis, a police officer had been shot. I'm not sure if he died or not, but just, you know, what's up with the shooting the police? I mean, you know, I hear all this hatred and negativism about the men and women in blue. But, you know, the interesting thing about it is every time something happens, we call them. Now, you know, these people putting their lives on the line each and every day. just like us veterans when we are serving in active duty, putting our lives on the line every day for you and me. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, you know, this is getting a little out of hand. It's just as out of hand as the amount of killings. And the fascinating thing about the killings within my community, not only is it alarmingly high, but throughout society as a whole, do you know that car crashes are no longer the number one killer? Now it's handgun violence, and that's pretty sad. I had conversations with several people this week in reference to what we should do about the violence, what we can do about the violence, and I tell them all the same thing. I want you to take the time, if you haven't seen it, fine. If you have seen it, watch it again. Watch the movie Meteor Man by Robert Townsend. It's a comedy, without a shadow of a doubt. But the end result of how the community came together and did what they did when it came to violence and drugs and mayhem was remarkable. And that's the approach we need to take. You know, sometimes we got to take matters in our own hands in order to control the destiny of not only our children, but also our community. And this is the time to take matters in hand. No, I'm not talking about vigilante justice. I'm talking about personal justice in your community. We've got to start taking this personal because it is a personal issue, and it becomes more of a personal issue when it happens to your family. So let's do something about that. Also, in local news, you know, in Indianapolis, they're creating this massive bus system, Bernstein, and here's the funny part about it. We already had buses. I still didn't figure out why, you know, whether they build a subway or a above-ground train system, that we have buses. I mean, it's not making the trip any easier. And here's a fascinating thing about it, Bernstein, that a lot of people don't know. It's interesting that 38th Street, especially within the black community, has been raggedy than hell, okay? I mean, it's like driving through Beirut.
You're right about that.
But they built this purple line, and here's the interesting thing about it. They want you to believe that the purple line and the red line, the yellow line, green line, pink line, there's so many colors now, that the reason is because more affordable transportation. That is a lie. Here's the reason. The reason is they need workers out in the suburbs, and they know that that's the only way to get them there. And rather than build the convenience of a rapid transit system, we put them on buses.
That's the worst idea ever.
Isn't it crazy?
Yes. I live right off of College, where they put in the first red line.
Yeah.
All you see is accidents on College. Now, you can't even get up and down College. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, believe me. I avoided a couple of accidents I could have created by messing with the red line and stuff. And then you can't cross the street and stuff with your car.
And then they put the bus stop in the middle of the street now, so you got to get off the bus and then cross the street. You know what I mean? I literally, a couple of weeks ago, there was a guy, he fell off the platform, was laying out in the middle of the street, and we had to stop traffic so he didn't get ran over.
But you know what's worse than that? What's worse than that is the fact that it's a safety factor, not only for young people, but elderly people crossing these big streets trying to get into the bus system. So
exactly. It's the dumbest idea ever.
The least they could have done is build enclosed overpass,
yeah.
You know, but that's Indianapolis for you. The other thing exciting is, once again, we'll talk about it, the combine. NFL Combine is here.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that for sure.
Yeah, and I plan on being there, as a matter of fact, for two of those days.
The slave roundup is coming.
Stop. Anyway, so this is happening in Indianapolis. Also, it's time for college basketball championships and the NCAA and all that good stuff.
The pimp roundup is coming.
Oh, man, he's hilarious. But anyway, this was going on locally. Now national news. You know, one of the things I'm elated about, Bernstein, and really excited about is, unlike any other war, whether it's World War II, one, Vietnam, Korea, never before has every nation, with the exception of China, and they're kind of, you know, like, dude, you know, take the chill pill, but everybody, Muslims, Jews, people of color, the Indian nation, Chinese people, everybody is revolting against this guy's tyranny. And you know, he doesn't care. That's the sad part about it. He doesn't care. And when I heard yesterday that he had been preparing his nukes, I'm like, really? First of all, he's not going to use them. People don't get caught up in this crazy hysteria thing that the president of Russia is going to be using. And I'm trying my best not to use the man's name because it affords him too much respect.
I got a question.
Sure.
I still don't know why he invaded Ukraine. Still never said why.
I can tell you why.
Why?
Those who own the land own the power.
So what, they're trying to rebuild the USSR again or something?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he needs to expand. And here's the sad part about it, to show you how stupid he thinks we are. And that is, his whole excuse is to protect the Russian border. Well, you know what? After he takes Ukraine, what about the next country?
Which is Poland.
Exactly. Hello. That's how this all started before. And it's starting all over again. History constantly keeps repeating itself when it comes to the president of Russia. Go ahead.
I created a corny joke this weekend.
Oh, boy.
I've tested it out, and everybody tells me never tell this joke again.
Okay.
Can I please share this joke
with
you?
Tell the joke. Tell the joke. I got to hear this one.
What do you say when the president passed gas?
What?
What do you say when the president passed gas?
Ooh, that shit stuck. That's what I was. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
President Putin.
You get it? Now that is funny, though.
I finally got a laugh.
That's funny. I thought that was good. People said, don't tell that joke again. Please tell it a couple times.
They said, don't tell that joke ever again.
That's funny. But anyway, back to the whole Ukraine situation. We have to realize that we're dealing with a person who is very intelligent, very well-spoken, a student of history, as a matter of fact, that's crazier than hell. You know, it's interesting, all the brilliant people in our lives that are crazy. Charles Manson, brilliant man, just crazy as hell. Adolf Hitler, brilliant man, but crazy as hell. Putin, crazy as hell. I mean, it's interesting. And, you know, the other interesting part about it is that now I see where people are realizing that our eyes have been so blind for so long about things that are going on and around the world that if nothing else, just like Trump, President Trump, doing and saying the stupid stuff he said, this guy is doing the same thing, and it's making people wake up. Realize it ain't about war. It's not about killing. It's about preserving. It's about presenting. It's about the power of people as a whole coming together, doing something that's right, rather than constantly doing something that's wrong. You know, we need to stop this man, just like we stopped President Trump at the polls. Okay, and even that, he's going to do a Trumpism thing. He's going to try to take the country back over, this, that, and the other. Some people in our society don't need to exist, period. Now, I'm not advocating killing anyone because I'm a pro-life person, which we'll talk about later on today as well. But what I am advocating is this. Take those people, put them on an isolated island. You know, as a matter of fact, that's the best way to handle our criminal justice system. Okay, if you think about it, you take people who are ill against society, put them on an island, make sure you give them strong protection, they can build their gardens, and let them take care of their own set. Because I'm going to tell you something. I guarantee you that prison island, okay, they'll have their own justice. And for those of you who have been locked up before, like Bernstein, no, I'm serious.
Only for a few days.
Yeah. 5 years, but no. But no, seriously. Yeah, they'll take care of themselves.
They've already done that.
They haven't been on no island.
Yes,
is my
have.
Alcatraz?
No.
What island?
It's called North America. What do you mean?
He is.
England sent all their criminals.
That's true.
Here.
That's true.
And yes, they've already done that, sir.
But but hopefully the same results don't happen, because look at the nation that we have today. They built. Okay. Of course, then too, they came over here and they killed a bunch of Indians.
Yeah. So. What we do, we just take all the criminals now and send them to Mars.
No, I think we should take all, serious business, I think we should take, build an island, because there's lots of inhabitable islands out here, okay? And put them on an island, let them have their own prison society. Let them have their own government, let them do whatever, you know, once every couple of months or every 2 months, you know, take them provisions, dump them off, and let them be. That's what we need to do, because the prison system's not working, okay? Overtaxed, and it's overtaxed with petty criminals, not hardcore criminals, petty criminals. Like, this guy spent, 7 years for smoking marijuana? Come on. You know, there's people that kill people don't spend 7 years. So we got to change our whole culture. Also need to do, especially right now, is support the people of Ukraine. That's what we need to do. And even though I'm against it, with all my heart and soul against NATO going into the Ukraine, because it's just going to create another problem, but we should throw everything we can to the Ukrainian government. And you know what? Here's something that I found out. I didn't think about it, and I knew about it. But for 10 years, two brothers were the top dogs when it came to heavyweight boxing. Was it the Coleco brothers? Is that their name? These men, who are very, very wealthy, has taken their gloves and put them down and picked up a uniform and arms to defend their country. That's what they did. And that's what everyone else needs to do to support that effort and support peace once again in their region. Because right now, it's very, very bad. What's even worse is it's setting the world up for China to do the same thing to Taiwan. So we need to pay very close attention to that. And that's not the half. Look at the pollutants. They're shooting these bombs and stuff, and this stuff is polluting the atmosphere. So look at that from an ecology standpoint. You tree huggers, okay, hug some trees, but at the same time support the Ukrainian government, okay? Now, let me share a couple of things with you. This weekend has been a remarkable weekend for me. I did some bodyguard work. Yes, I do that too. This weekend, or yesterday, as a matter of fact, I had Bradford Marcellus. And not only did he put on a magnificent performance, Woolworth, I mean, you know, Grammy Award-winning smoke last night. But after the show was over, there were, and I've got to say this, don't nobody get upset, but there were four or five young people who were part of my Caucasian family that were out there. One of them had his trumpet with him. And Wynton came out, and he spent a half an hour talking to these kids, making the correlation between music and history and doing the things that are right. It was really a remarkable conversation. Listen to him. In fact, one of the young men played the trumpet. But one of the things that Wynton said to this group of children, which are kids, they're teenagers, from Hamilton Southeast, I think, what he said to them was, look at music. Look at music as you do with life. You have flows, and you have ebbs, and you have lines, you have notes. And let music be your life's mission, because if you do that, then your life will be far better than it is today. I thought that was really, really interesting. We talked for a while as I walked into the automobile, but just a brilliant musician, a brilliant human being, and this guy is a fabulous person because he stood out in the cold. It was very cold last night. And he admired the fact that these kids waited for him in this cold to have the conversation with him, and he talked to him for about a half an hour. I was freezing my butt off, but he talked to him for about a half an hour. And it was just a marvelous, marvelous conversation. So shout out to Wynton Marcellus, brilliant musician, magnificent educator, and just a downright great human being. So check that out. Now, the other thing, back to the world, the Supreme Court justice that they just nominated, this young woman, fantastic, her credentials are impeccable. And the interesting thing about it is, you know, all that stuff that McConnell and the Congress, or Senate especially, did last year to block Barack Obama from making a nomination of Supreme Court justice and then selecting the person they chose, and another ultra-conservative, was just horrible, no matter how you look at it. It usurped the United States Constitution like nothing. Of course, that's been happening for a while. But what they basically did was put themselves in a situation where this nomination is etched in gold. And the reason being is because this woman has went through, what, 4 confirmation hearings as far as being a judge at different levels. And she had the support of McConnell and whatever the other, what's the other guy's name, the conservative senator who carries Donald's toilet paper. I can't think of the guy's name. But anyway, these two gentlemen had no choice but to come out in support of her. Now, in Indiana, what, you got that? Oh, let's play the clip. You know, we should have interlude music like the Twilight Zone. Doo-doo-doo. Here we go.
If confirmed, she would replace Judge Stephen Breyer, a liberal member of the court who announced his retirement in January. Judge Jackson served as a law clerk to Justice Breyer earlier in her career.
I've been a federal judge for 8 years, and I have a duty of independence. I clerked for 3 federal judges before I became a judge, and they were models of judicial independence. And what that has meant is that I know very well what my obligations are, what my duties are, not to rule with partisan advantage in mind.
Well, make sure it's wrong.
You know, the only thing that I find negative in what you said is this. I don't care who you are, what you do in life, the whole attitude of impartiality is a myth, because we are all conditioned by our surroundings. We are captive of our surroundings. So depending on where and how you were raised will depend on your attitude towards a lot of things, and you cannot be bipartisan in that, because you're an individual that was developed from a mental standpoint of view by those things that you surrounded yourself with, or those things that surround you. With that being said, how old is she, by the way? Look that up for me. With that being said, you know, this woman, I think, is whether she's black or white, she just happens to be black. Ha ha ha! This happens. But this brilliant black woman, I think is going to not only do well in the Supreme Court, but I don't think that she is as liberal as some would want her to be. I think she has a pretty perfect balance, or as perfect as can get, as somebody that is bipartisan. However, beware of that whole tag, bipartisanism, because the truth of the matter is none of us are bipartisan, period. I mean, do you agree with what I'm saying?
Sorry, what you
do you agree that none of us can be bipartisan?
No, it's not possible.
Yeah. So that's what's happening in the nation right now, and can't think of anything else. What else is going on? Let's see, besides we're starving, and everything is going up, which happens at war anyway. The other thing that happens at war is, even though everything goes up, the war machine, ask Allison's. Trust me, puts money in the economy, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. Oh, I know what. Let me share this with you. I am going on record and saying that I am a true.
Yeah, she's 49.
49.
That can't be right.
No, it can be. It can very well be. And just think, she can be on the court a lifetime. Okay, if she chooses, her choosing. 49 years old. Wow, that's fascinating. And she's younger than you are, right?
Yeah. Hey, shh.
I ain't gonna. Hey,
man. She's younger than me. What? There's no way.
No, that's cool. And she's a Harvard graduate.
She's 51.
Well, still a death is
the
very
same
young.
Age.
But it, still a death is very young for a judge.
It
especially
is
the Supreme
young
Court.
For a judge. Is she single?
Oh,
is she single?
Hey.
Yeah, check that out, too. See if she's single if she has any children, because that's
interesting. She's been married since 1996 to Patrick G. Jackson.
What's he do?
He's like Stedman. No, so I don't know. Let me check that.
Maybe he's like Nick Cannon, man. Come on. But anyway, let me go on record saying that I am a pro-life person from the word go. I don't even believe in the death penalty. And I think that these conservatives who call themselves right-lifers, but they vote for the death penalty. Now, what kind of sense does that make? That's not being true right to life, okay? I am right to life from beginning to end, period. And let me share this with you. And I'm sure this is going to tick some people off, especially women, but I'm being honest with you. I don't believe in abortion, even in situations of rape. Rape is a violent crime without a shadow of a doubt. It's humiliating to the woman, and it's horrible. There's no more horrible crime than that. But at the same time, are we killing another Martin Luther King or Malcolm X by doing such? And really, the ultimate person who suffers from all this is the unborn child, because they had nothing to do with this whatsoever. And they should have the ability to strive and be born. You know, I know a remarkable lady, even though she doesn't like me anymore. She thinks I'm
a He's a white man. And he...
What, her husband?
Yes. He's a white man, and he's a doctor?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to get back to that. Let me finish this one statement.
Okay, sir.
You know, the truth of the matter is we have to look at it a little bit. Like I said, I know a young lady who a remarkable person. You know, she turned sour lemons into lemonade. Who was raped by 25 men. This is a black sister who's still living with this. And she became pregnant as a result of that, and she did not abort the child. And this child is a brilliant nurse, saving lives. And she will tell you herself that she's very proud that she kept this birth, because her daughter became a wonderful person, as a person who had her was equally as wonderful. So, you know, I hope this person's listening, because I want to give them a shout out, because, girl, you know, you're wonderful for what you did, and showed a lot of courage and showed a lot of respect for life. So that's what I want to say about the life. If you want to call in, we can talk about that. Matter of fact, we'll make a show just for that, because it's a big controversial issue. Now, back to the Supreme Court justice. She's married to she's married to a white boy.
A descendant of Columbus.
No, Columbus is actually Italian.
Yes, true.
But anyway, a man of color. Columbus was a man of color.
Yes, Columbus was a man of color. So her husband is a man of...
He's white.
Different culture.
Right. And he's a doctor. Now... Let me share this before some of you militants jump up and say whitewash. The Vice President of the United States is also married to a white man as well. Now, the first thing, is that what our sisters do? You know, they get up here in life and they marry white boys. Well, first of all, both women were married to these white boys, as y'all want to call them, way before they became who they were today. Secondly, what difference does it make? There's not any of us out here of color. Now, I'm going to be real about the United States especially. There's not one of us in the United States that doesn't have some white blood somewhere in our system. Let's be real. I mean, it is what it is. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to start talking about, but by golly, wow, guy, or that's not going to happen. And, you know, that or, you know, oh, you're messing me up wrong. Well, that ain't going to happen. But we have to acknowledge the fact of truism in our culture, and there's probably not one black American that doesn't have some white in their blood.
I don't agree with that.
Prove it.
Because every person of color was a descendant of slavery.
didn't necessarily, I didn't say that.
So that means there is a chance there are people of color that's in this country that don't have white blood in them.
I didn't say that.
What'd you say then?
No, I didn't say that all of us came from a slave background. But I'm still telling you, because of dealing in America itself, period, chances are there's very few, if any, that don't have white blood in their system. It's just a fact, whether it be by marriage, whether it be by birth. Because this is the culture in which we not only exist in, but it's the culture that we're raised in. So the chances of us not having such is probably better. Or put it this way, the chances of us having such is probably far better than the chances of not. So that's all I'm saying. But I don't care whether she's married to a white boy, a Jew, or it doesn't make a difference to me. What makes a difference to me is that she dispenses her responsibility fairly. And this is yet to be seen. So we'll find out. You know, that's the name of the game. Oh, I got to give a shout-out. Shout-out to Louisville, Kentucky. Yes, sir. Because Louisville has produced one outstanding young black woman. I mean, you know, it's interesting to be born beautiful, and it's interesting to be born, she got a body just like a Rolls Royce, okay? But she's super intelligent, very kind, very nice, very understanding. And Jane Henson, I'm going to give you a shout-out because you have really impressed me. And hopefully we'll have you on the show when you talk. She's from Kenya, or her background is from Kenya. Although she's born in the United States, just talking to her would be interesting. And I plan on doing that with a lot of people that I come across to meet, of getting them on the air so we can talk to them and just kind of find out what's happening in their neck of the woods, as Al Roker would say. You know, Al Roker's retiring or something, I guess. Do you know that? He's about to step away, which is a shame because he was more than just a weather reporter. If you really sit and listen to Al now, I don't agree with some of his philosophy, but give Al some credit. Oh, and by the way, let me tell you something I found out yesterday in church. And I can't think of the man's name, so I want you to look it up. But this the guy, Uncle Tom, he really existed.
Yeah, Uncle Tom exists.
Yeah, but wait a minute, let me tell you what I did not
know. He's a good guy, though. It actually was
Sambo
that sold him out. Uncle Tom really was
the
people.
Right, and you know what? Now that we in our culture, Uncle Tom now means a snitch. This guy wasn't no snitch.
The real Uncle Tom was not.
No,
they got the story all back.
Oh, hey man, if you can pull it, because I was really fascinated when I heard, you know, about what he did, and he was a slave, but he went to Canada after he got free or escaped or whatever you want to call it. He went to Canada and did some pretty remarkable things that had to do with lumber, as a matter of fact. So I was fascinated. Listen to him. I said, really? So yeah, check that out. I mean, he wouldn't, you know. Now, the Uncle Ben guy, I ain't sure about. But this Uncle Tom guy, it was pretty of a story. So Bernstein's going to look up some clips so we can talk about that as well. Now, let's talk about my favorite subject before we get to sports. No. We got to take a pause for the cause, because I got my nicotine-stained fingers is requesting my presence. So I'm about to have me a smoke break. We'll be back shortly. Welcome to Controversy. You're dealing with I got to get back on the air here. I got to kind of, I had to go out and smoke my cigarette, you know. So so work with me here. Okay, we're back. Welcome to Stephen B. Excuse me, welcome to So Controversy, Stephen B. You see, doing the key for excellence as key, black, bold, and beautiful. So, and let's pay some bills first, and then we're going to get into some issues. Hey, March the 4th, 2022, Tana B and YazzaRadio.com presents Funny First Friday Comedy Show. That's right. That's March the 4th, 2022. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. Show starts at 8:30 p.m. And that's going to be at the Premier Ultra Lounge at 1020 East Washington Street, Suite 790 here in Indianapolis, Indiana. You've got several comedians. You got Mick Shaw, Don Mason, and he's the comedian who I know, Wynette, and Hypnotic. So you should check that show out and support our efforts to be quality. It's March the 4th, 2022. Also, let me give you our lineup, our radio lineup, YazzaRadio.com. Moving forward, Sunday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Thursday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
No, moving forward is now on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. My bad, I need to update that. I'm sorry.
You know, hard to get good help, okay? I'm going to start going to the white community. And no, seriously, but what's the correction on that again? Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., hosted by Dwayne Abernathy. And Controversy, you see, that's me. That's on Monday and Wednesday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Now, okay. Also, line up, YazzaRadio.com, moving forward. Now, is there any changes on this?
Moving forward, Tuesdays and Thursday.
Okay. It's moving forward. No, it isn't. It says Sunday and Thursday.
It's been changed. See the correction? Thursday,
Sunday, and Thursday.
That should be scratched out. So it's Thursday, Tuesday, and Thursday. We haven't fixed
25. Boy, you got, come on. Tuesday and Thursday. Okay, let's see. Tuesday, both 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.? 10 a.m. 12 p.m. with your host, Wayne Abernathy, Controversy, myself, Stephen B., from 10 to 12, Monday and Wednesday. So check that out as well. We're going to be adding some programming. I'm going to tell you a little bit about that later. The call-in number is 515-605-9800. That's 515-605-9800. Also, hey, while I'm thinking about it, let me give a shout out to Evangelist Mae Merriweather. Fantastic lady of God, really. I mean, and you know, one of the things her brother's a pastor as well. In fact, he's a pastor of the church. One of the things he said, and she said yesterday to me, which was remarkable, was, you know, yes, we are Christians. Yes, we strive to do the right thing, but that don't mean they're perfect, okay? There's no such thing as a perfect human being in this world, and they're 100% right. But the interesting thing is the pursuit of a successful destiny is what they both believe in, and if there's nothing else we agree to together, and that's the one thing we do. So shout out to May Merriweather. Girl, keep talking, keep walking, and keep preaching. We need that kind of talk. So now, let's see. What were you? Oh, that's
Uncle
right.
Tom.
Yeah, play the clip about Uncle Tom. Check this out, y'all.
Let me get it here for you.
Oh, boy.
Sing to the people.
You can't get it. Yeah, oh, do what? My country to the people.
Josiah Henson, a.k.a. Uncle Tom. Uncle Tom. Josiah Henson, a.k.a. Uncle Tom. Uncle Tom was born June 15, 1789 in Charles County, Maryland. He was separated from his parents when he was a kid after his father got disciplined for standing up to a slave owner. His father received 100 lashes and got his right ear cut off. One day, at the age of 9, Josiah was caught reading a grammar book by a slave master, Mr. Riley. Mr. Riley beat him so bad, his eyes were swollen, and he became unconscious. As he grew older, he became the overseer of the plantation. Josiah was able to work and stack up some money so he can purchase his freedom. But Mr. Riley cheated him out of his money. So after that, he escaped to Canada. And that's where he gave his story. In 1852, author Harriet Beecher Stowe released a powerful fictional book called Uncle Tom's Cabin. Fictional, but it was also based on Josiah's life. This book was so powerful that if you were caught reading, selling it, or buying it, you would be arrested. Not only could you be arrested, but you could also be sentenced to death. Inside of the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, you will learn about two characters. One, Uncle Tom, and the other, Sambo. Uncle Tom was a good dude. He never snitched. He never beat anybody. And he was the guy, if your sack was empty or your sack was low, he would take cotton out of his sack and put it into yours, just so you wouldn't get beat. Because he was so looked up to, he was so loved, and he was the man holding everything down, they had to put another slave in charge of him, and that slave was Sambo. Sambo's orders was to beat Uncle Tom every night, all the way up until his death. Uncle Tom was beat to death in the fictional book for not giving up the whereabouts of two women slaves that escaped. So let's change that narrative on Uncle Tom. Uncle Tom was a good dude. Sambo is what we should be calling people, not Uncle Tom. You should be proud to be called an Uncle Tom. That name came from the white slave owners who viewed him as a traitor.
Now you know the rest of the story. I thought that was really, really interesting. I appreciate you getting that clip for us. Very educational. You know, sometimes we don't understand that truth is important. You know, and part of the truth is a lie and only serves the purpose of the person who's telling it. So
exactly.
Keep that in mind because it's very, very important. And let me share this with you. Those of us in the mental health field also have a reality that we need to really deal with. And that is, you know, I can think of a lot of things I've done in life. Everything from being a member of the clergy and, you know, going to school and, you know, becoming the person I am today. But trust me when I tell you this, if there is a scam in the world, it's got to be psychiatry and psychology, and I'll tell you why.
You say scam?
Yeah, it's a scam. Check this out. First of all, it's very subjective, number one. There's nothing objective about it. Number two, half the time, and I'm just telling you just from doing it for years and years and years, half the time we sit there and listen to other people's problems. Number one, we have our own problems. Listen to people with problems. But the truth of the matter is, half the time we're not even listening. Half the time we're too busy doing other things and thinking about what we need to do, and especially the money issue. So, you know, just be aware that I have the same feeling about psychologists and psychiatrists that I have about priests. And being in the clergy, Catholic clergy, I'm very sensitive to that. And that's this. A, you don't need an interceder to have a discussion with God. Just talk to God. Okay, so that's one part that just gets on my last nerve. The other part of it is, just like a psychologist, half the time they're not listening. I'm just being real. So, you know, keep that in mind. I don't want people to think that going to such can help you because obviously anything that can enhance your awareness about yourself is going to help you. But it is what it is, okay? It is what it is. Not as bad as being a lawyer. You know, they're bottom feeders. But, and I'm always saying that because I heard that before. You know, if you want to really deal with a person of no character, deal with lawyers. But that's another story. So now, let's see, we did that, Oh, sports time. Come over here, Bernstein, we got to talk.
The slave trade.
First of all, yeah, I'm sorry, Frank. Before I get to the positive things, first of all, let's talk baseball. Now, these guys play like 160 games or something like that crazy a year.
Yes, they play a lot.
Trust me when I tell you this, I'm a baseball fan. I am. But if they go on strike, which it's a lockout now, and things continue the way they are, I'm not going to miss a couple of games, okay?
Right. They need to cut down at least 70 of the 120 games.
Yeah, I'm not going to miss it. And let me tell you something else. Minor league, like in Indianapolis, we got a world-class baseball stadium. World-class. I'm serious. You haven't seen anything like this. And they're going to still play. They don't care about no strike. So the benefit is those younger players out there on the farm teams, the A's and the triples or whatever you call it, they're going to get some recognition. And on top of that, more money, more money, more money.
Don't they strike like every 10 to 12 years baseball?
And I'm not even sure what they strike about, to be honest with you. I mean, basketball and football, you kind of know. But baseball is kind of vague on why they're striking. I mean, we're talking about millionaires, okay? When you compare the money that athletes make, baseball players are probably paid better. In fact, they are paid better than most other sports. Okay?
Yeah, they are.
So, I mean, do you know what's going on with this strike thing, this lockout and all this? No.
Greed.
greed. But here's what I think the fans should do, and I heard this morning on one of the talk shows, but it makes sense. If they're going to strike and baseball is not going to be played for six or seven games or eight games, whatever you're talking about, then maybe the fans should also use as many games just to not show up. I guarantee you that will change the culture of baseball. Enough said. Now, Aaron Rodgers. Wait a minute. Boy, I'm telling you, this guy is playing the NFL, not just the team, the NFL, man, like a fiddle. Truth of the matter is, they're talking about offering this man $50 million a year for 2 years. That's $100 million. You're only paying, 16 games, 17 games now a season.
How much they going to give Aaron?
$50
million. That's crazy.
Yeah, but this is what they're talking about. That's the crazy part about they're even talking about it. So what's your feeling about Aaron Rodgers, period, man?
I think Aaron Rodgers should be banned from NFL for one whole year for lying about the COVID test. He said he had the vaccine and he lied. And they didn't do nothing about it.
I think I don't know what to think about that.
So he should be banned for one whole season.
But you know what? I really don't honestly know how to think about that. And I'll tell you why. If there's two in the NFL who have really gotten over and you haven't heard a lot about it, that's Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady and the New England culture. I'm serious. The next time they build a new stadium for New England, they need to put jail cells, you know, where their locker room is, so they can just take all those people who are criminals on their team, including the coach. They got their own sleeping quarters, okay, right there in the stadium.
Are we doing that?
We are.
Is that what we're doing? We going to hate on them because they went winners. New England are winners.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. Let's be realistic. I can't take anything away from their winning record. That I can't. But come on, man. You had the coach spying on other teams with cameras. You had the deflated football. I mean, come on, man. I mean, enough's enough.
Okay. They inflated football. The Colts was getting whooped by three touchdowns.
Didn't have anything to
They
do
could have had a flat football, a football with air in it, a football with helium in it. They still was going to lose that game.
I didn't tell you guys that Bernstein's a communist. That's obviously, you know, they tell these fixation stories and make you want to believe it, all right? Truth of the matter is they're a bunch of criminals. But anyway, but back to Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. If Tom Brady was allowed to get away with what he got away with, then why the criticism of Aaron Rodgers? Now, I think they're both wrong, and I do think that Aaron needs to have some penalties, without a shadow of a doubt, because technically, no matter how you look at it, he put his teammates, the administration, put them in I just think it was a bad idea, period. Wait a second, I didn't call because it's real important. Wait a minute. Commander Harris. Wait a minute. Oh, shoot. My speaker thing ain't working. Oh, can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Commander? I guess we can't hear each other. Listen, I'm on my radio broadcast, so let me call you right back, okay? But that was a great concert last night, and what I want to tell you, can you hear me? What I want to tell you is, well, I tried to call you over there because I was with Wynton Marsalis, and Sandy didn't know it at the time, my sister, but anyway, I was trying to get over to you because he came out and he sat and spent over half an hour talking to some kids outside the door, and I thought it was wonderful. And I'm going to give you a bit of that conversation when I talk to you a little later. But right now, okay, I should put you on there. Reason I'm saying that is because right now I'm Cordell Harris Jr. So, and I want to get him on the air one day. How can we do that?
You need to call in like you just did, or
he's on my phone.
He's
on my phone.
Call this number here.
No, he's on my phone.
That's what I'm saying. He can call in right here.
Commander, wait one second. Wait.
Or you can call him.
Ladies and gentlemen, wait one second. Hold it. Wait a minute. I got to take my earphones off. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Do you mind writing down this number and calling me back so I can put you on the air, because I want to talk about some issues that you, especially in the Black History Month, can give you some wisdom to. Could you do that? This is a number I'm going to give you that's directly, that will patch you directly into my show, and I can hear you on air, okay? Okay, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, give me a few minutes. We're doing this. You can only do this on regular TV, because if you do it
streaming radio.
Yeah, streaming radio, because if you do it any other time, you get in trouble. But this is going to be one hell of a conversation, trust me. You ready? Give me a few minutes, y'all. Please mute it. Okay, the number is 515-605-9800. Got it?
It's not that I don't want you here. Yeah. It's something about the way you stare into my eyes. I know that I don't make things clear. I fall for
Okay, we're about to have one heck of a telephone conversation with a piece of history that's going to blow you away. Like I said, his name is L. Harris Jr. He's the chaplain, or the former chaplain of the National American Legion. So as soon as he calls in, and you got to show me how to answer the phone, Ernstine. Yeah. And while we're preparing for him to call in, since we're in the middle of sports, I want to find out what happened to Warren Moon. He's a part of history.
What do you mean, what happened to Warren Moon?
This is him calling in now.
Yep.
Wait one second. Answer? Commander? Commander? Okay, wait one second.
Yes.
Wait one second. I got to do my ear. And these things, man, are really kind of hard to do right. Okay, wait a minute. What's this going on? Okay. All right, we're back on air. I'm talking to a person who's been knowing me far before I knew myself. Just to give you a little light history about him, he is formerly the National Commander of the American Legion, which in itself is historic. And Commander is in his 90s and still very, very brilliant. Career military. And I'm going to ask some questions that give some insight into History Month about where we are and what we're about. Commander, how are you doing today?
Oh, fine, fine. After a nice concert last evening, we're doing very fine this morning.
Fantastic concert, wasn't it? I mean, he wailed. He really wailed. And this is the first time I've ever met him. I did some bodyguard work for him last night. And when I say a most remarkable individual, just an individual, the way he sit out and talk to children, freezing cold for like half an hour, I froze my tail off. It was just remarkable hearing philosophy and his wisdom, and how he correlated music to life. And I tried to get over here to see you. Did you see Ralph?
Yes. Yeah, he came over and we had a nice long conversation.
Good, good. Let me, since this is Black History Month, let me go back a little bit and tell them where you're from originally.
North Carolina. I'm a Tar Heel.
But we won't hold that against you.
Very, very proud Tar Heel. I wouldn't have said that 6 years ago, but I am a Tar Heel.
And let me share this with the audience, if I may. Not only did I grow up under the tutelage of this man, his daughter and his son, his daughter's a doctor, and his son is a lawyer. We sit that back and look at what's going on in our community today. You know, they want to talk about the thugs and the drug dealers and stuff, but they don't want to talk about how we have doctors and lawyers that are coming out of our community. And it's sad. And you know what? They're children. Going back and being one of color, kind of explain the atmosphere of the military and what you went through in those beginnings.
Well, my military career started in 1948. So back then, we definitely had two armies. It was us and them. Our total mission, though, was defending the United States of America, and we took that very proudly in the situation that we were in. My first combat experience doing this came in 1950 when I was sent to Korea and to participate in the Korean War. There, it was our units and their units. However, the North Koreans and later the Chinese didn't know that we were separated, and so they were firing at Americans, not at groups.
Let me ask you a question. You've oftentimes said that during those years we had two enemies. Those we were fighting in, the enemies basically within the United States. Explain that.
Well, there was a definite dislike in many of the areas of command on our units, our personnel in our units. And this started evidencing itself when President Truman signed the bill integrating the services more than ever before. Because before it was accepted as part of the plan and you paid it no mind. Once he did that, brought about a new mindset. So we were consciously awaiting to see the changes develop. And I retired in 71 and they were still, the changes were still coming about.
Do you think that the military of today and the relations between those of color and those without, I shouldn't say without color, but our white brethren, do you think that it's better today than it was in 71?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Definitely in 71 and totally better than it was in 48 when I entered the service.
You know what someone told me? You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you know what someone told me, and I think that you and I shared it, that you guys would get on a bus back in the day, and they would cover the windows to keep you from watching white women?
I never experienced that. I was stationed all over the United States and even in the Deep South, and I didn't experience that.
But have you heard that before?
I can't say it didn't happen. I've heard that, but I just didn't experience it.
Let me ask you this question, and this is probably paramount to conversation. If you had to do it all over again, and I'm only talking about the racial part of it, if you had to do it all over again, would you?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Because my experiences, my negative experiences, were outweighed by the positive experiences so greatly that they almost erased themselves. Not forgotten, but almost erased themselves.
Do you think that today of color really appreciate sacrifice and what has went through?
You're breaking up on me now. I can't understand you.
Can you hear, is it fine now? Is that better?
Yes, now I heard you say that's better. You're breaking up again.
Do you think that the young people in the military today will truly appreciate the sacrifice and what you guys went through for us to be where we're at today?
I doubt it very seriously, and I say I doubt it from ignorance and not a negative ignorance, if there can be such. When you can only read about or occasionally hear about your absence of an appreciation factor.
Sure.
I had one experience I never did even tell you all about many years ago, and the spark of youth. I could have easily been Emmett Till in uniform.
You mind sharing that with us? You mind sharing that experience with us? Okay.
Say again. Oh, yes. This was in 51 in Douglasville, Georgia. I was on my way to my first assignment after career, and I was in civilian clothes in a civilian car, but I had my uniform slung across the back of a two-door sedan. And the red light caught me in the town where we used to try to avoid the two light stop lights, red at the top, green at the bottom. However, this light caught me, and there to my left was a service station. And at the service station, there were some police. And immediately, they walked over. I thought one of them walked over to my driver's window and said, "Can I help you, officer?" And he told me, "Talk to him." And I looked. And there was one over the other door. And just talked to him, went on for a while. And then they wanted to search my car. And they wanted to know where I was going. I said, well, I had started at Fort McClellan, Alabama. And for some reason, the uniforms hanging up on the pipe across the back didn't impress them that there was a soldier. And they started looking at everything, and then they picked up the shoebox that my grandmother had made my lunch, sandwiches, and I said, "No, gentlemen, if you want to see in that, I'll help you. That's my food. I don't want you picking up my food." And that they heard too sheepishly, and I happened to look up, and I saw a linen white tractor and trailer caught at the other direction by the light, and I asked the police, could I go over and talk to that driver? Mm-hmm. And they said, yes. And I went over, and the driver was white, but he looked at me, and he recognized me right away. My family wasn't known in my little town.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that that was probably my saving.
This
fellow recognizing me, recognizing the family, and both policemen went over there and wanted to know if they knew that boy. And they told him, yeah, they know him and his family and everybody else. So then they let me proceed on to Fort McClellan, Alabama.
Wow, that's deep.
Yeah.
That's really deep. Let's talk briefly about your experience in American Legion. As you well know, through your tutelage and your mentoring, I became one of the first persons of color, one of them, that became vice commander of the Department of Indiana. And without a shadow of a doubt, your accomplishments becoming national chaplain was historic. What's your feeling about us of color being involved in the American Legion or getting more involved in the American Legion?
Well, perseverance, availability, attendance, participation. I think those words, a realization and a practicing of those words will make us more visible in the American Legion. The American Legion, like any other organization, if you're going to sit on the sidelines, you're going to be on the sidelines. You can fully participate and still be on the sideline, but at least you'll be on the sidelines noticeably.
Sure.
And a lot of times you're going to be pulled off the sidelines into the mainstream. And as you are well aware, that that has happened in your American Legion career as it has in mine.
Yeah, and let me ask you, how do you feel about what I'm about to say? You know, one of the things that has fascinated me about the achievements that you and I both have shared in American Legion, it seems like the further we rise doing what we do, the more criticism and ridicule we've gotten from those of color. You've taken it a lot better than I. I'm getting better at it, but you've taken it a lot better than I. What's your feeling on it? What's your take on it, number one? Why?
Well, one, I think it may be a carryover from the old days. And when I say old days now, those are the days that precede you age-wise.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, there was a phrase that you don't hear much today, uncle. Followed by Tom.
You know what? It's funny you should say that because we just finished playing a clip about Uncle Tom and kind of educating the people that, you know, if we had a choice between being called Sambo or Uncle Tom, we like to be called Uncle Tom. It was an interesting story, but go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No. Today, even as so many improvements have been made racially in all aspects, we still have that internal element that we'll hold ourselves back. And those of us who are advancing will sometimes be held back by our own or try to be pulled back. And on most occasions, there's been no success in this area.
Crabs in a basket theory. I mean, I don't get it. I think there's, you know, I'm very proud of my service in the American Legion. I'm very proud of the fact that we accomplished some of the things we accomplished, especially like Jazz in the Park and things like that out in the community. But I think what disturbs me, what disturbs me is that certain posts, I got this allergy. Certain posts, and I'm not going to mention any, Well, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. That'd be unfair because my show is called Controversy. You know, when I sit there and look at the Post of Color and the national seed of the American Legion, that has achieved unbelievable success and recognition throughout the United States, unbeknownst to a lot of those members. I'm just disheartened of what that post has become. You know, at one end, for the programs you created, Flags and Avenue, and I wanted to talk about that as well, to everything we've done to this point where we were a shining star in the American Legion, a post amongst posts, that now we have come to becoming just another bar. I mean, what's your feeling of it? Because you spent a lot of years, far more than I have, working with that particular post. I mean, what's your feeling on that?
Well, it's somewhat hurtfully disappointing. As you're well aware, many hours, as you have alluded to, have been spent there in trying to tell our story as veterans that came through some of the hardships that we were confronted with in the service, but still had an allegiance to our nation that far exceeded any of the personal experiences that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to do this in our American Legion post. Now, what is, I think, has happened, unfortunately, and maybe not even mischievously, I think a desire to rise in popularity has exceeded or erased somewhat the mission of the organization.
Mm.
I hate that as much as anyone else, as I've caused you to spend quite a few hours on the clock, as you're well aware, bringing about activities to not only increase our popularity, to show our mission and purpose, to be an active part of our, not only the surrounding community, but the city of Indianapolis.
Wow, and
this,
you know,
this has happened.
Yeah, and you know, I sit there oftentimes and think, especially I did a lot of things last night, oftentimes and think, you know, these guys that came before us, the Dr. Page and the Mr. Boatwright and yourself and Big Ed. And the Buffalo Soldier, what was his name? The Educator. I can't think of his name for lack of better words. That we have on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, I you know, for some reason, I think at times that those that are still with us and those that are not, especially those that are not, are probably turning over in their graves at what this magnificent historic post has become. What do we do to change that culture? Because it's so important, because I really feel that without this post, and if it allows or if it's allowed to die, then not only is a valuable part of history going to be destroyed, but a valuable part of our community will be lost as well. I mean, what is it that you feel that we can do to reverse that culture?
I don't know. I wish I could come up with a conclusion. Maybe I could sleep better, but that is a 24-hour item that is constantly on my mind, regardless of what else I'm doing, as I know it is with you.
Sure.
The hours of labor. I don't mean the hours of relaxation, the hours of labor that have been expended in that location far exceed, in all probability, anything that will happen there should the activity last another 50 years.
Sure.
Because the devotion apparently is not evidence in itself in today's element.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a sad thing. I'm going to switch up and share something with the people, and I want you to share your memories. We had two gentlemen who were members of that post. One just recently died a couple of years ago, who were veterans of Pearl Harbor and saw activity at Pearl Harbor, which you knew both of those gentlemen. Speak a little bit about that and share a little bit about what they told you about their experience in Pearl Harbor as being men of color.
Well, the one is probably more prominent than the other as Comrade Harvey, William Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
As both of us were exposed to all of his life now that he has departed us.
Mm-hmm.
And belonging to the same spiritual community, we had conversations about the service that far exceed even down at our post.
Mm-hmm.
And the experiences that he had were married in some part with regard to the experience factor in service by both of us.
Sure.
Now, his was a little worse than mine because his service was a little bit different. Everybody was a little bit closer than they were in the Army.
But he was in the Real Service, the Navy.
Yes, okay, I'll accept that from a Navy veteran.
You know what, I remember the story from Mr. Harvey about Turk and him taking a rifle, basically a piece as we call it, and shooting down a Zero. I mean, that's pretty, if that happened, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been to Pearl Harbor, and
mm-hmm.
While there, though I was there for a period of R&R, I did have a few moments where I kind of reflected on the activity of December the 7th mm-hmm. of 41, and I looked around, and many of these things were stories that I heard in later years had some believability to them. I found them to be true. And we have won suffrage from those days, Dora Miller.
Mm.
I still think he is a sailor who should have received the Medal of Honor without any questions that's still being toured around.
Yeah, yeah. You know, speaking of the Medal of Honor, you did something
You started to break up again.
You did something a couple of years ago in reference to the Medal of Honor that was remarkable, and there's nothing like it in the United States. Could you talk a little bit about that?
The Medal of Honor is our nation's highest award for heroism.
Mm-hmm.
And much to the general public's awareness, it was thought for years that we never received it. And we started receiving them back during the Civil War.
Mm.
The first one was given to a member of the, I think, 53rd Infantry out of Massachusetts. In fact, one of the members of that organization's grandson, was in our post.
Yeah.
And he later, quite later, received his Medal of Honor. But one sailor received two Medals of Honor, one in 41, and the other one in 1843. And so far, as the data that I have received, he's the only service member who received two Medals of Honor. And he was as his proper today to say a man of color.
Mm. Wow. And this memorial that you have placed at the post that we're talking about, which is nothing like it anywhere in the United States. And I do know that I was there, that two of the members of the that won the Congressional Medal of Honor came to the post. Tell them a little bit about the flags on the avenue.
Yeah, well, the avenue of the flags that is in front of American Legion Post 249 there on Martin Luther King 2523 is dedicated to the African Americans who have received the Medal of Honor.
Mm.
And as I was told by one of the members of the past District Commander Council, fear not, Chaplain, we are well aware that the Avenue of Flags came about prior to Power and Light Company putting the unit down in the canal.
Amen.
And I appreciated it for that, to let them, that someone knew that the Avenue of the Flags dedication did preempt the Power and Light's big pocketbook.
And how many flags and exactly what those flags represent are the flags, I mean, the Avenue of the Flags?
Each flag represents a service member who received the Medal of Honor. The flag, the avenue, is to be open on every holiday and throughout the month of February, weather permitting. It is maintained by the Sons of the American Legion, a part of the American Legion post. Mm-hmm. Many of the legionnaires that belong to that post also belong to the Sons. They are called dual members.
Mm-hmm.
I have the privilege of being one of those. My father was in World War One.
I as well. I'm very proud of that, too, as well.
Yes.
You know, in closing, as a person who has reached the level of National Chaplain of the American Legion, and ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about National Chaplain of a worldwide, I mean, excuse me, well, yeah, basically it is a worldwide organization because we have a post in France, or, yeah, France, and then China in exile and Puerto Rico. When you reflect on that year of what you were able to accomplish, what do you think was your greatest contribution during that time?
Well, as you are well aware, as the post chaplain, and I carried it on to the district, the military before performance before and after the American Legion funeral, I think, was one of the biggest things that I think that I brought to the American Legion. Mm-hmm. And as you are well aware, the American Legion consists of 55 departments.
Mm-hmm.
And I have carried this message to the department chaplain of all 55 departments. And there are, of course, I, with a little self-pride, did mention them to them, the Avenue of the Flags. However, they didn't have to be so race-specific, but it was a thing that they could consider in their district, in their departments, of bringing something about to let the public know what members of the American Legion or members eligible to join the American Legion have done.
Hmm. And that in itself is very important to the survival of the American Legion. Ladies and gentlemen, let me share this with you, that the American Legion, and there's, don't get me wrong, there's some great veteran organizations out there, the VFW, AMVETS, what else? AMVETS, VFW, what am I forgetting? Oh, the yeah, DAV, Disabled Veterans Organization. But the American Legion was the only veterans organization that was basically created by Congress, an act of Congress. So therefore, We report to Congress every year. It is probably the largest lobbying organization for veterans' rights in the United States. So that in itself, and like I said, the national headquarters is here in Indianapolis, Indiana, as well as the post of color that I'm talking about, post 249. In closing, Chaplain, besides, I'm sure I can say this with much pride, of your pride in your service, and thank you for it. I mean, you know, to serve in two wars, Korea and Vietnam, is something in itself that's remarkable, and you're still standing, and that by the grace of God. In looking at things today, especially in reference to Vietnam and how the veterans were treated in Vietnam, what's your feeling about, you know, the treatment of the veterans of Vietnam?
Well, as a veteran, my first exposure came when I got back to the United States and got off the plane.
Yeah.
I was met by the Jane Fonda platoon. and it started there, where a young man wanted to know how many babies did I kill with all those stripes that I have.
Wow.
I must have killed plenty of them.
Oh.
And I let him know that I didn't hear well. He'd have to come a little closer. And I repeated this to him several times. And as he got just about close enough, his buddies grabbed him. He said, "Man, don't you get in his arm reach. He's baiting you over to him." And, which was true. But the respect given to what was happening to the service members there was unfortunate in the United States. Those who survived the war there, many of the veterans of Vietnam suffered cancer. Mm. And that was one of the byproducts of Agent Orange.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I was one of those who very proudly and religiously was saved from the fatality of cancer.
Mm.
But my Vietnam experience gave me that condition.
Yeah, both physical and mental scars. Yeah, yeah. Well, in closing, Chaplain Harris, is there anything you would like to share with our listening audience, especially our Black listening audience, of what they should do, can do, and hopefully will do in reference to the American Legion?
Well, I would say visit your American Legion post in your community, wherever your community is, or wherever you visit, or whenever you visit the various cities. And visit there, see what they are doing. And if you have members of your family that are veterans, encourage them to join on the American Legion post, because it is exclusively for veterans. Although there are five big veterans organizations, your host, like I, would only encourage you to join the American Legion, because we are the ones who started it all many, many years ago.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Chaplain Edward L. Harris, Jr., former National Chaplain for the American Legion. I appreciate it. And you know what? I've got to get you back on this show, because you and I need to sit and talk some jazz, okay?
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Talk to you later. We're about to take a pause for the cause, and then we'll get back to our show.
brother. There's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love into here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Simply called our hair is long.
Oh, you know we've got to find. Bring some understanding here today.
Oh, oh, oh. Pick it back and pick it back. Don't punish me for brutality. Come on, talk to me. You can see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on.
Ooh.
Right on. Right on.
Online again. This is Steve Barnett, your host of Controversy, Stephen B. doing the Key of V. Excellence for you and me, bold, black, beautiful, and intelligent I am. Talking to you with 10% of my brain. The rest of it's in my wallet. I'm saving it for a better day. Also want to let you know that my son Elliot, who is a Harvard grad, who's a financial planner to several people, Jay-Z, also Will and Jada Smith. He is a financial genius, trust me. And there's no saying, no romance without finance. It's time for you to become romantic with your finances. So I'm going to try to get him on the air Wednesday. Hopefully he's going to be available because, hell, half the time, Bernstein, I don't even know where he's at, either Atlanta or Jamaica or England or somewhere. He's gone somewhere all the time. But it's going to be a very interesting conversation, and he's going to teach you a little bit about how to handle your money. And he's good at it. So that's coming soon. Hopefully we're going to do this Wednesday, but I have to check with him and see what his schedule is like. Now back to the combine. And you call the combine what?
The slave trade.
Okay, let's talk about the combine. The football.
His take a knee protest rocked the NFL.
Go ahead, I got the clip.
Okay. Let's do a clip.
NFL and now Colin Kaepernick's causing controversy with his new Netflix series in which he compares the way the NFL scouts for players to the slave trade. Here's Les Trent.
Colin Kaepernick is at the center of a new controversy over this scene from his new Netflix series, Colin in Black and White. Actors playing prospective NFL players who dramatically turn into slaves headed to the auction block. Yep, the former NFL player compares the league's draft process to the slave auction block.
The NFL scouting combine happens every February. Prospects for the NFL draft attend a week of skill and endurance tests. At one stage, all players are weighed and measured wearing only shorts.
Before they put you on the field, teams poke, prod, and examine you, searching for any defect that might affect your performance. No boundary respected. No dignity left intact.
Look at this. Come on.
The scene cuts back and forth between slave owners and coaches. On Fox News, a former NFL player slammed Kaepernick.
A process of someone living their dream, going to the National Football League, comparing that to slavery. It's gone on.
Who is this ignorant person who's an NFL player? Really? Come on. You know, the truth is what it is. It's the truth. So the combine, even though I, being a sports fan, definitely NFL fan, have problems with. And Bernstein, what's your take on it, man? What's your take on it?
It's true.
Do you not think that it is a culture that is reversible?
I look at it like this. All sports is like that, and I don't think it's a color thing, though. It's just unfortunate that most of the people in the NFL are people of color, but they treat the white players the same way. It is what it is. It's like a racehorse. You got to be the strongest buck. We're going to look at your blood. We're going to look at your muscles. So I don't look at it as a race thing, though. Okay. I look at it as it is what it is. It's the same practice as the slave trade or an auction.
But you know
it
what?
It is what it is. But I don't look at it as a race thing. I don't look at it as racial, though.
But see, here's the interesting thing about the combine. They didn't used to do this in the NFL. Back in the day when we're talking about Tarkington and all those guys, they didn't do that.
Okay? Yeah, but they weren't giving nobody no $50 million either.
You got a point.
That's why.
You got a point. The combine is here in Indianapolis, Indiana, my hometown.
This is the last year.
Oh, is it? Where's it going now?
It's going to Vegas or L.A. I told you that last month.
Really?
Yes.
Why? Do you know?
More money.
Oh, once again, that statement, more money. I'm going to get the chance to visit the combine because one of the things about the combine is interesting is everybody cares. It's not open to the public. So I'm going to get a rare insight. Unfortunately, I can't take cameras in there, but I will talk about some of the aspects of what I see in reference to the combine. So we're going to do that next week. Oh,
can I say something?
Sure.
Not to cut you off.
Sure.
I would like for everybody to know one thing about Bernstein and Yizer. I'm not big on calling things races. Because after a while, when you understand capitalism, it's about the green. And the thing about how you control racism is once we start directing our money that we're getting from the so-called races is when we can eliminate racism.
Teach.
We're getting the money.
Teach.
Instead of buying the rims and the houses and you know, the baby mamas, redirect our money and we can have a voice.
Especially in Indianapolis is interesting because Indianapolis has a large black population. We're a city of 1 million people, and probably about 40% is that of color in some way or another. But here's the interesting thing. The interesting thing is, especially when you talk about Indianapolis, we don't own any banks. We don't own any major land. We don't own any major anything. Now, I'll tell you what, we got a lot of churches and liquor stores here. A
bunch of them.
But, and in fact, every corner there's a liquor store, there's a church.
Facts.
It was reported to me in an organizational meeting I was with, I think the concerned clergy, that every single Sunday, some outrageous figure like $15 million are given at churches.
I can believe that.
Yet we don't own anything. And I'm pretty sure.
Churches own a lot.
Well, yeah, it's true. But we don't own anything substance in Indianapolis. And I'm beginning to think as I tour the United States, that's true in most black communities throughout the United States in reference to our revenue. We have more than enough money to have our own banks, our own hospitals, our own lending institutions. I mean, land, we do. But we just don't spend the money doing it.
We direct our money in the wrong direction.
And guess whose hands it falls in? Capitalist.
Exactly.
And capitalists don't have no color.
Ain't no color. No. They don't have no color or no religion.
No, no.
A capitalist don't have no color. You know what they race and they religion is? Capitalism.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Listen, let me I got to get to my catfish alert. Got to.
Yes, you got 5 minutes.
All right, check this out. Let me tell you something. Guys, girls, women, men, stop being stupid. These people are unbelievably clever. You know, for instance, and like I said, I test these people all the time. I had a young lady that I had befriended on Facebook probably a week. I love you. Send me some money. What? Well, if you can't send me any money, you don't trust me. What? Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
I guess I
don't
trust you.
Stop sending the bank cards. Stop sending money to people you don't know. Because if they love you in a week and they want your money, trust me, it's real. And chances are they're getting aren't real. Okay? Stop it. It's a $500 billion scam. People can't afford a phone right into it.
Some of those pictures are, you can get one piece that's really a piece. That
I promise you this, but I got to make sure everything is legal about what I'm doing. I'm sorry. And really, the fraud that they're perpetrating on those in the military is really shameful. I mean, people out here defending the right to freedom of speech, you can't do this? I mean, really? Get out. All right? And, but, you know, a whole might be a but it ain't a job. Okay? It's on the bill. You're being sponsored by Daniel Gardner. Talk about Daniel Gardner.
Digital Guard, need cameras for your home or your business. Digital Guard, high-definition cameras for your home. Go to eventhomecrimes.com. And for the business, go to businesscrimes.com. Also, we also now have the opportunity for support to support our radio school. We'll support Steve's $133. He will give a shout-out to your business, or you can do a campaign for $1,200, and in 3 months you'll get a 30-second video commercial, a 30-second audio commercial, and it's also a 3-month marketing campaign. So you can start as low as $133 a month, or you can do 3 months for $1,200, and it comes with a video commercial, an audio commercial, and also a 3-month marketing campaign.
And in fact, we can get on air.
Yes, yeah, it'll be on air.
And
yes,
you can talk about your business. So
yes. Yes,
you
for 3 months.
It's all about supporting us.
The number. I got to give out the number.
The phone number.
Interested, the number is
847-232-9368. That's 847-232-9368, option 4.
Option 4.
All right. Y'all need
support
to,
the movement.
Y'all need to check us out. In closing, let me say this to you. Your successful destiny is determined by you and the God within. If you can't depend on those two elements, then you might as well just, you know, call it a day and pack it in, because with the God within and yourself, you're going to achieve great things. Your journey towards greatness awaits you. Be peace, be profitable, be successful, be highly light if nobody else but yourself. Do it. Become a success. Your magical mystery tour called Greatness awaits you. And this is Stephen B. closing out for another show of controversy. It's been fun, but we got to run. Don't forget, every Monday and Wednesday, I'll be here for you from 10 to 12. Thank you. God bless you.